never filtered. Always fun.
There's a big fan base out there when the team is winning.
Yes.
Now, they're still there when you're losing, but they're not going to show up. But if you can do this, blow it up, reload, replenish the farm system, and you become a really quality team in 4 or 5 years, they're going to be there again.
Shut up and drive.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, Steve Simmons from Sun Media in here. Craig Button will join us here in just a moment. I think we are actually interrupting Craig's Calgary Stampede party that he is hosting at his place today, I believe. So we're going to call him up in a few minutes, and I guess Stampede is off to the races.
The whole town changes. There's no equivalent in Toronto to the Stampede. It takes over Calgary, and it takes over in a way, like Calgary's pretty much a normal city except for the 2 weeks of Stampede, where it becomes a cowboy town, and everybody dresses up. It's like Halloween. Everyone wears boots, and everyone wears cowboy hats, and everybody walks around like they're part of the show. And every night at the Stampede, there's a rodeo during the day and chuck wagon racing at night. And, you know, if you've ever, I don't know if you've ever seen chuck wagon racing, but live, it's a really fun thing to, I'm not a big rodeo guy. I don't really like cruelty to animals, but the chuck wagon races, for the most part, is quite a fun event to see. And the Stampede is like a big CNE kind of on steroids with a whole bunch of other things. And all downtown, every bar is partying and lit up for country music and country stuff. And it's, I mean, I remember.
Oh, I've heard great things about it.
I bought cowboy boots my first time through Stampede, and I bought a cowboy hat my first time through Stampede, and nothing looked more ridiculous.
I don't picture you
than an
that
overweight
girl.
Jewish guy from Toronto at the time was about 35 pounds overweight,
right?
With a cowboy hat and boots. If you want, I looked about as ridiculous as you could look, and you know what? At that time, I didn't care.
But everyone probably looked the exact same way: flannel shirts, big boots, bad hats.
And again, traveling with the Flames in the early '80s. Half the players had cowboy boots. Like, that was part of the garb you wore when you lived in Calgary.
I remember the first time I met Brian Burke, he was wearing cowboy boots. And I asked him about that, and I kind of chirped him in a way. I'm like, why are you wearing those? And he was like, I wear them based on comfort. That they get a bad rap, that they're, you know, very stiff and they're not very comfortable. But if you work in a pair of cowboy boots, I guess it's like the best pair of shoes or boots you can own.
Yeah, very comfortable. You know what doesn't work in that well? The hats. The hats look pretty ridiculous. If you're not a hat guy, some people can wear hats and get away with it, and some people just look, you know, like Seth Rogen.
Right.
I look like Seth Rogen.
Doesn't work for you.
No, didn't work for me.
Yeah, it's a bucket list item for me. I think every Canadian is aware and is envy of the Stampede, the aura of the Stampede, and the reputation of how much fun it is. But I think there's a limitation in terms of how big your city can be in order for one event to truly take it over. Like, Toronto's too big. You can't have an event like that would actually infiltrate every corner of the city.
It doesn't infiltrate every corner of the city, but I think TIFF has a significant impact on the city and what becomes for that those couple weeks, and how people go celebrity watching and people are downtown, and there's a real vibrant scene around the restaurants.
But do you feel like you have to be a part of TIFF to be considered Torontonian?
No.
Because I don't.
But I know,
I've
I know
never
lots
been to a
of
TIFF movie.
I know lots of people that go every year and make it a part of their September.
Sure.
I've never been necessarily one, and I'm a movie nut, but I've never been one of those. But lots of people do, but there's no single event. I mean, when I was a kid, the X was the place to be, those final 2 weeks of the summer.
Right.
And everybody loved going to the X.
And the X doesn't have that same vibe to it. I went for the first time in years last year. And
it's kind of a dump, isn't it?
There's nothing really to it.
Wonderland, I guess, is the big place to go.
I haven't been to Wonderland in probably 20 years.
Yeah, wait, give your child a couple more years.
Yeah,
you'll be buying season passes.
Oh, I'll be going.
Yeah.
I'm well aware of what's in my future. All of a sudden, all of the landmarks and those kind of activities will come back into the wheelhouse for yours truly.
I went to a lot of concerts. You know, as a kid, you go to concerts because you want to see the bands. And then all of a sudden, the bands are Sharon Lois and Bram and Fred Penner and Raffi.
Different world.
And you're singing along.
Yeah.
That's when you know you're in trouble.
Well, that's me with the Wiggles now. Like, if the Wiggles or Splash and Boots, like Splash and Boots were at the X last year, and that was a part of the reason why we went down the day that we did, so that we could see them perform. It was like a big deal.
Yeah, the day that you're in your car by yourself listening to it and the kids aren't around, that's when you know you're in trouble.
That's when you're stuck. Because it's just, it feels natural to you. You're right. I'm listening to the same Disney song for the fifth time in a row, and I've been driving for 30 minutes and the kids aren't even in the car. What am I doing with myself?
Yeah. Not anyway, good for you.
No, it's not. And Stampede, again, is, I guess, officially underway out in Calgary. We head there now, and joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Craig Butner, TSN hockey analyst. What's happening, Craig?
Not much. It's you know what the temperature is here?
No.
It's about 35 degrees. There's no humidity, a little breeze, and Stampede's kicking off tonight.
So, Craig, are you the boots and cowboy hat kind of guy? Just boots, no hat? What's the act for tonight?
It's jeans and a nice Western shirt and a cowboy hat and the boots. You can count on it. I'll be posting.
I just can't picture it, Craig. I can't picture it, man. I want to see it so badly.
No, I'll send you. You'll see it on Instagram. It'll be all there. Well, I mean, there's a great big party. It's called the Acumen Party, and it's just a wonderful time. And Steve, you can relate to this. Brian, you will at one point in the future here. But, you know, we go there, we see a lot of our friends, and we see a lot of other people that we might not have seen as regular. But all their kids are there now, because my kids are 21 and 24. So it's amazing now how we're all there with our kids. And, wow, how things have changed.
No kidding. Yeah, that always is a shocking moment, I can imagine.
You know what's also,
it's fun.
You know what's amazing to me also about the Stampede is I was covering it like in the mid to late 80s, and all of these cowboys were riding horses and riding chuck wagon races, and some of the same guys were doing rodeo. And then all these years later, they now have, you can see the rodeo and you can see the chuck wagon races, I think on CBC during the Stampede. And it's all the kids of the guys who were riding chuck wagon races. Like,
so the names ring a bell for you.
I knew virtually every name, and it's more than 30 years later. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, they don't just breed the animals. They breed the riders and the cowboys
right.
All the way through, right?
I guess, man.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy yourself out there. I mean, there's obviously the big news here in Toronto is the Zach Hyman contract. And Steve and I talked about it briefly in the previous hour. And I felt like Hyman became a whipping boy at times this year, unnecessarily. He's not a superstar. He's not going to be a superstar. He doesn't put up a ton of points. And I don't picture a scenario where he breaks out and becomes a 20-25 goal scorer. But clearly Babcock likes him. The Leafs are willing to commit to him. What did you make of the terms of the deal, 4 years at 2.25 per year?
I like the terms. And I think in a lot of cases, and, you know, you can look at the stats, you can look at what he doesn't do and use it as a baseline for criticism and saying, oh, wow, he falls short. But there's a lot of things that Zach Hyman does and does very, very well. And I am not going to suggest that he is this player. But in the fall, Gary Lettinen, three-time Selke Trophy winner, is going to have his number retired by the Dallas Stars. And I can tell you what, Gary Lettinen never, ever was the leading scorer. He was never, ever the player that had the gaudy statistical numbers. But I can tell you this right now. We do not have the success we had. We do not win if we don't have Gary Lettinen. Because all he did was make everybody around him better. And I think Zach Hyman, maybe in a different way, has that type of game. And I think Mike Babcock not only recognizes it, but he highly values it. So for me, what Zach Hyman, if you want to just take out the stats and say he doesn't score, he doesn't do that, yeah, you're going to be right. But there's so many other things that he does that to me are incredibly important to a team's success.
Do you think, Craig, that there's a Draper, Maltby, you know, Babcock memory kind of thing going on here with Hyman, where he knew how valuable those guys were for his Detroit Red Wings teams, and now needs that same kind of capability with the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, well, I do, Steve, and I think, again, like, well, would it be nice to have everybody scoring 30 goals? Yeah, but that's not realistic. So what you have to do is, okay, what are the other things that are important to winning? What are the other things that are important to Austin Matthews having success? You know, one of the things, and we talk about the NHL, is about the ability to create space and the ability to have space. Well, Zach Hyman creates space for Austin Matthews this past season in a way that allows him to be very successful. So, well, you might look and say, well, he doesn't finish this player, he hasn't scored this many games. There's so many other things, from the penalty killing, which was really good for the Leafs, from Austin Matthews scoring 40 goals. And again, there are areas that a coach can value and look at and say, I think that it is. Kurt Maltby was a 50-goal scorer in junior hockey. Chris Draper was a top goal scorer, point producer. And where they became incredibly valuable was not trying to be like Yzerman and Fedorov and Shanahan and those guys. It was giving them something different that gave opponents real challenges. And I think that's the case with Zach Hyman. And, you know, Connor Brown, who's going to come up here, and we're going to probably hear an announcement on a new contract in the near future. But I think those guys, you know, allow, you know, the Marners and the Nylanders and the Matthews to do their thing and, you know, really help the team be successful, because they create so many challenges for an opponent because of the things they do.
How would you use the framework of the Hyman deal and apply it to what you expect Connor Brown to make?
Yeah, well, yeah, probably very similar. I mean, does it become $10 million over 4 years? Does he score 20 goals? Does it become the exact same contract? Does it become a shorter contract because of where Connor Brown, he feels he can get more goals? But one of the things I would say, you know, just looking at Connor Brown is, I think he's a real good player. I think he can produce points. But as other players, and I look at Nylander specifically, get more opportunity, will Connor Brown have the same opportunity to get that many goals? So I think it's a balancing act. You can think that, wow, I deserve a little bit more. But what happens if he takes a two-year contract and only averages 14 goals the next two seasons? Well, that might change where he comes out of it. But I think it's right in that, if you want to get to a four-year deal, it's probably right in a similar range as Zach Hyman.
With Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst, a lot of mock lineups being drafted here in Toronto because Leaf fans are buzzing about what happened recently. I think we can all expect that Dominic Moore signing means he's your fourth-line center, so we're pretty familiar with what's going to happen up in the middle of the ice, presuming all four centers return. You got Matthews, Kadri, Bozak, and Moore. But beyond that, it really gets intriguing. You know, Marner and Nylander are going to get their minutes and are going to be top six kind of guys, but something's got to give here because Kapanen, I believe, is ready to play. I think he proved that down the stretch and into the playoffs. Josh Levo is in limbo. I mean, they just protected him. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's 23 now, I believe. But he's got to battle it out with the likes of Martin and Hyman and Brown and Kapanen. Is there an odd man out for you, Craig, that is maybe more obvious than others?
Well, the first thing is I love internal competition. I think having the choice between having too many and players having to come in and compete for a spot and perhaps having to make a difficult decision, I'd much rather have that than trying to plug players in that aren't capable. And that's what you want to have in your organization. You want to be able to get these players to a point where they come in and they show that they can not only hold a spot in the lineup, but, you know, they're going to be able to contribute. So I think with Josh Levo, again, the biggest thing with Josh is I think that he's shown that he has short runs of capability. He's got to be able to stretch that out over longer periods of time. But, you know, I've said this about Kapanen. He had to find what I really felt was a constancy of purpose. He's not better than Nylander or Marner. He's not going to get those types of minutes. So what he's got to do is find a way to be really productive on a consistent basis in his role. And I think he's finding that. And now he earns his way into that. I think the same way with Josh. You got JVR and you got Marlowe on the left side. You know, Hyman plays the left side. You got Brown. All I know is this for the Leafs. They have now created a lineup that I feel really, again, creates a lot of challenges for teams. pick your poison. Who do you want to play against? Do you have the depth to go three lines deep, maybe not 10, 11 forwards deep on them? I think that becomes a real challenge for opponents, and that's how you want to be. You want to be versatile, and you want to be deep. And I think with Levo and with Kapanen and maybe some others, Grunstrom in a year's time, that really puts them in a good spot. And again, you're going to have to make decisions. You're going to have to, other players are going to get pushed out. But let the competition begin and let the best man win.
If you were putting the lineup together, Craig, where do you put Patrick Marleau?
Yeah, well, you know, I don't think, I know Mike really likes, you know, consistency and everything that goes with it. But when you start to look at the lineup and you start to see where Patrick Marleau is and where Hyman fit last year, like, I kind of see an interchangeable part for both those players. He knows Hyman can play with Matthews, and he knows that, you know, depending on what the circumstances are, and it might be just a stretch where Patrick Marleau, you know, might not have as much juice over a two-week period. So you can put Hyman in there. You need a little bit more scoring, you put Marleau in there. But the thing about Zach Hyman is that he can now fit into so many different areas. He's going to be a penalty killer. He's going to be a player that's going to, you know, be able to apply pressure and create opportunities with his skating and with his smarts. And it also allows Patrick Marleau, at 38 years of age, to be able to be managed and to be able to put in situations where he can excel. So it's not so much about locking Marleau or Hyman into one spot or another. I think the flexibility, the versatility of both those players really is a nice addition for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
With Craig Button here on Overdrive, three superstars coming into July 1, three faces of their respective franchises were due for new contracts or were eligible for new contracts. McDavid got his officially yesterday. Carey Price got his on July 1. John Tavares still hasn't received one. Still hasn't got one. You know the Islanders would hand it to him today. You have to presume it's the Tavares side of things that is kind of waiting this out. I've heard he wants to know where they're going to be playing in the future. It seems like a reasonable request. Hey, where do you think we're going to be playing before I sign this contract? Maybe who would be playing with him in the future. But what do you make of this that, I mean, it's only 6 days past July 1, but that we're not hearing much out of New York in terms of what's happening with Tavares?
Well, I agree with you, Brian. I think this is totally about John Tavares. I think it's about, you know, where's the team headed? I'm talking, they're going to be playing. And I mean, there's not a new arena coming here in the next three years. So where they're playing right now is where they're going to be playing, in my view. They have new ownership. That's not changing. So I think John Tavares wants to say, listen, if I'm signing on the dotted line long term, what gives our team the best chance to win? And do I have that opportunity there? And, you know, I think that he's evaluating. I think Garth Snow is looking and trying to say, okay, what do we got to do to get in here to get John Tavares to believe that we're doing the right thing? One of the big things, and I think this is a huge thing about how your team is built, because it's not just on the ice, it's behind the bench. You need to have coaches that can maximize the potential of players' individual talents and the abilities of a team and whatever that potential is. Mike Babcock does that in Toronto. Todd McClellan does that in Edmonton. Mike Sullivan has shown unequivocally he can do that in Pittsburgh. Joel Quenneville. I'll tell you right now, I don't see it in New York. And that's not a knock against Doug Wake, but he's not in that class of coach because he can't be in that class of coach because he has no experience. So I think that the Islanders, like, you know, on the ice, behind the bench, and then the uncertainty with their, you know, where they play, how it works and everything, I think there's a lot of things working against the Islanders to get John Tavares on a long-term contract.
Thank you, Craig. Enjoy it out there, buddy. We're looking forward to that picture hitting social media.
Oh, yeah, you can have a lot of fun with it. But yeah. It'll be cowboy hat, boots, and jeans.
All right, buddy. Enjoy it.
Thanks.
There's Craig Button joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Toyota Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Stampede kicking off in Calgary, and Craig's going to be all over it. But it's funny how the Tavares to Toronto rumors, or that idea, the logic that had always persisted here in Leafs Nation, bring PK home, bring Stamkos home, Tavares had been talked about for a long time. Now the team has improved so much, no one cares anymore.
Well, they should care, but it's just so highly unlikely. I think this city has lived through the Stamkos is coming home and Subban is coming home and all that nonsense over the years that I think, you know, we're kind of exhausted from it. But with Matthews doing what he's doing and Nylander doing what he's doing and Marner doing what he's doing, and this is just the beginning. We don't even know where they're getting to yet. So there's an excitement about that that precludes excitement about whether John Tavares stays on the island or not.
I would be quite curious to find out what the reaction would be if the Leafs traded one of those kids for Tavares. Because people are now so committed to these three kids and what they are and what they represent, and they're homegrown. They were drafted by this team, and they hit the ground running, and look what they could be in the future. And a lot of it is projection. A lot of it is assumption in terms of what you actually believe they're going to become. But Tavares is a superstar.
If neither of them are Matthews, I'm okay with that.
You would trade Marner for Tavares?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. That's the smart hockey move.
I mean, look at what you're seeing in the NHL right now. Who just won the Stanley Cup? Why? Crosby, Malkin. That was the major reason they won the Stanley Cup. Look what Edmonton's putting together with McDavid and Draisaitl. When you can put together, what did Gretzky and Messier do all those years? What did, you know, Trottier and Goring do? I mean, there were so many good
comments. And Francis. Yeah, you know, go down the list.
Yeah, so many. If you can put two all-star centers on the same team, it changes the equation. As good as Kadri is, as good as Bozak may be, they're not Malkin. They're not Draisaitl.
They're not Tavares.
They're not even close to Tavares. But if you could make one of those moves and put a Tavares in there, then you've got something really special. Oh, I mean, you have something special anyhow.
Right, and that's the point, is that like Leaf fans, I think, are so committed to this journey that they don't want to see anything throw it off track. That's why the reaction to Patrick Marleau coming aboard, the mentality of Leaf fans as a whole, you can't speak for everyone, you can't paint everyone with the same brush, has drastically changed so much over the past decade, it's almost scary.
Well, it used to be desperation.
But that's what I'm saying. Remember when they traded for even Ron Francis? It was like, Ronnie Francis, who cares if they traded a first-round pick for him?
He was so done.
He was done. Owen Nolan, Brian Leetch, these guys were effectively done. They were over the hill.
Yeah, Leetch, I'll disagree. Leetch played pretty darn well here. But Housley was done, and Francis was done. And
Owen Nolan was a beaten-down player. Yeah. It was just the back end of their career. But those guys were all around the same age as Patrick Marleau. I mean, Nolan was younger. But Francis was 39 or 40.
He was so slow.
He was done, right? Even when they brought Gilmore back the second time, Dougie was at the end. I mean, he got injured, and then we never know what would have happened anyway.
He was
anyway.
Still done.
But Dougie was, I'm sure he would admit, like it was the end of his career. But back then, the reaction, as far as I can remember, maybe I'm misinterpreting this looking back on it, but it was kind of like, wow, look at this player. Look who we got. We got name value here. Patrick Marleau is a borderline Hall of Fame player. He may get to the Hall of Fame. And yet now it's like, wait a minute, how is this going to affect what these kids are going to do?
Well,
or how they're going to get paid?
Understand this, too. This is Patrick Marleau's 20th NHL season coming up. How many players in their 20th, 21st, and 22nd NHL seasons succeed?
Well, how many players get to that point?
Almost no one. But virtually even the guys who get there, they're like hanging on for dear life.
Mm-hmm.
And everything I checked on, I phoned people, I asked around, can he still play at this level? And everybody said yes.
Yeah, he can skate. He can skate.
Because usually that's what breaks down.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know where he's going to fall in the lineup. Like I said this when they brought him aboard. I like that they've improved bringing in Patrick Marleau. I don't love the contract. I don't think he's worth, at this time in his career, 3 years at 6.25. That said, I understand to pry him out of San Jose, you probably have to overpay. So if you really want him, that was going to have to come with it. And if he was leaving San Jose, this was more than likely going to be the framework of the deal. But he has certainly improved this team, just being on it. But I think you could make a sound argument, as of day one, he's their fourth best winger. Like, Marner and Nylander are absolutely a better player today than Marleau. I think JVR is a better point producer. Is he a better all-around player? Maybe not. That might be up for debate. But JVR, on one of the most potent offenses in the league last year, finished second in points. I think he had 62 points last year, 29 goals. I think he is a better point producer at this point in his career than Marlowe. So Marlowe may be the highest paid player on the team, and he's like the fourth best winger.
And if somewhere between now and training camp, they could make the kind of deal they were looking to make with the Islanders for Travis Hamonic, and they move JVR for the final year of his contract and bring in a defenseman you can play in your top four, then suddenly you've fixed really almost two spots, because you've made left wing a better defensive player in Marlowe,
mm-hmm.
and then you add a defenseman to your team, which ups the value of everything you do. And I think, you know, they're going to let, if they can't trade Van Riemsdyk, they're going to let him walk, I suspect, at the end of the year.
Unless
he'll sign below the value before below market value.
I can't imagine he would do that. I think he's been underpaid based on his point production at 4.25.
Some people, you know, hockey's funny in this. Some people don't care. They want to play in a place. They're happy in the place. They're comfortable in the place. They'll take less to be there. Marty Brodeur did it in New Jersey for years. Raymond Bourque did it in Boston for years. The Sedins have done it in Vancouver. They want to be there. They've taken less money to do so. Would Van Riemsdyk do that? I can't speak for him.
But I'm not sure even what that number would be, though, Steve, for the Leafs to be like, okay, we will accommodate that request.
5.5?
That might be too rich. It might be too rich. Like, if Matthews is going to get...
Isn't every 30-goal scorer anywhere now a 5.5?
The thing is, they have an abundance of that now. It has happened so quickly where you've got guys in Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Kadri's a 30-goal scorer. That's four guys right there who scored more than JVR or have the ability to.
Kadri's a 30-goal scorer once.
Yeah.
I don't believe that will happen again.
I wouldn't be shocked, though, if he scores 20, 25.
I think he's a 25-goal scorer.
Okay.
Let's see where the moving scale becomes.
But overall, better player, more effective player.
Yes.
So
that's more things.
You'll take that every day of the week. Again, I would say Connor Brown at 20 to 25. I could see a point, maybe even this upcoming season, where you look at him and say, more effective than JVR.
That's a tough one for me, because I think JVR can make more plays on his own than a Connor Brown.
I think
can
he
make.
Probably can, but Brown's a very effective penalty killer.
I like lots of both.
Two-way guy, better defensive player.
I think Connor Brown's the kind of guy you win Stanley Cups with.
Right.
I think he's one of those guys. You give him a role, you put him in a place, he will do his job. He understands the game, and I think that's what I think the Leafs view him and Zach Hyman similarly.
Oh, those are core pieces. Maybe the outer core, but they're core pieces.
I always think of
the
Gary Howitts and the Bob Bournes and the guys like that were on those great Islander teams. Those players play a huge factor, just as we've seen with Pittsburgh with those middle range guys like Nick Bonino,
Matt Cullen.
You know what they've done for that team. Matt Cullen, by the way, is in all kinds of demand for a guy who's supposed to be retiring,
40 years old.
Everybody wants him.
There's an example. Did you see him skate in the Cup final?
Yeah.
After playing every second night for 2 months? Guy was a beast at 40 years old.
Yeah, and I also saw him with his uniform off. He's a little guy.
Yeah, he's not
like
big.
He's not a guy that...
But that's the NHL now. You run in... We saw Ryan Strome at the draft. He's not a big guy, but he can skate. Like, that's the modern-day NHL. It used to be big, thick, kind of tree trunk legs. Now it's more about being lean and being able to move.
Did you see the tweet somebody sent out from the NHL awards?
No.
It was a 10-year-old who presented one of the awards in a suit and tie, an actor whose name now escapes me.
Mm-hmm.
But he came out, presented the award. Somebody snapped a picture of him, sent it out. Mitch Marner at the NHL awards.
That's what he looks like.
What was the best tweet I saw from the awards that
Marner
night.
And Marner's going to look like that for his whole career.
Yeah.
He's not going to blow up to 205. It's never going to happen.
But he has that face, too.
Yeah, he looks really young. Mark Shapiro was on with Scotty Mack earlier today. We'll play a couple of clips, including the idea of trading Josh Donaldson. We'll let you hear what Shapiro had to say on that next. Jay's back in action tonight. Back home, Houston in town. If you haven't been paying attention, the Astros are lapping the field in the AL West. 16 games up on the Angels. 16 games. Plus 142 run differential. They have scored 490 runs
It's crazy to watch this team. I mean, they just crush their opponents. And it's even crazier to watch them after you get past the first guys in the rotation, because their starting pitching's not that good. And you get to like 3, 4, and 5. They could really use a Jay Happ kind of guy in that rotation. Hint, hint, somebody looking to trade somebody. But you get a guy like that. But in those games, instead of winning, you know, 10-0, they're winning 10-8 or 10-7 or 10-6.
Right.
But they, that offense, the way they run and the way they field and the way they do everything, they just attack you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's loaded. A great baseball team to watch.
Yeah, they're loaded. And Jays fans, I mean, they're 6 games under 500. They're still only 5 out of a wild card spot, I believe. The East is done. I mean, Boston's gone. They're a superior team. They're playing really well. Jays are 9.5 back. Jays aren't going to beat them by 10 wins over the final 77, 78 games. That's not going to happen. Could you psych yourself into believing that they're still in the wild card race? Based on the numbers, yeah. I mean, it's not impossible. It's happened before. This team has made up that kind of a number before. They did it a couple of years ago. But if you take the standings out of it, though, you simply watch this team play, it's very difficult to feel positive about them.
When you look at what happened 2 years ago, they were 50-51 when the trading spree happened. And they finished that year with 93 wins. And they played 700-and-something baseball the rest of the way, which is possible when you were hitting the way that team was hitting before they got going. That was a great hitting season from start to finish, even though they weren't winning the games in the first half or the first 100 games. The difference with this team is, in all the important areas, their starting pitching isn't good enough. Their hitting isn't good enough. Their fielding isn't good enough. Their speed isn't good enough. Their athleticism isn't good enough. There's a organization, now they're starting to measure everything in baseball. You're now measuring speed. And what has been determined is that the Blue Jays have the slowest player in the American League at 3 different positions. And you wonder why they're having defensive problems. You can start there and then look at other things. And one of those is Justin Smoke, who's pretty decent defensive first baseman. But they're not good in left field. Left field's just been a disaster.
It's been a black hole. It's been awful. But that's on management. Steve Pierce was never an option.
It's absolutely on management. So when Mark Shapiro comes on, as he did today, and says, we're a bit stunned by our defensive play. Well, yeah, but left field is on you and Ross Atkins and Sherrington and everybody else right. In the front office. You had to get a left fielder. You didn't. And Zeke Carrera is lost out there.
No, they're like, utility players. Like, so, that's what they are. They're backup bench guys.
So then you get Batista in right, who is deemed to be the slowest right fielder in baseball.
And we knew that last year, that his defensive play was tailing off.
But I thought his defensive play got a bit better this year to start. But I think overall, it's just not up to par. So, and Tulowitzki is the one guy you sort of look at and say, he should be great, right? And in most years, he has been. The first 2 years in Toronto, he was great.
Oh, historically, you could make an argument he's one of the great defensive shortstops of all time.
Oh, yeah. And I think
throughout his career.
Even though he's played shortstop in a different manner in which we've ever seen before. And I thought for 2 years, I was astounded by how he threw the ball and how he never seemed to make a bad throw. And I think has he made more errors already this year?
I don't know the number, but 7 or 8 or something like that already.
So now you look at, okay, third base, because Donaldson hasn't played enough, was a bit of a black hole. And shortstop hasn't been as good. And second base has been in and who's been in and out. And when Ryan Goins is in there, it should be pretty good.
But he's had some problems.
He's had some problems. Russ Martin's let balls go by him that otherwise
he doesn't keep people honest, generally speaking, either. His arm behind the plate is not lethal.
Yeah, his whole game is calling a game and working with the pitchers and getting the most out of them, which he still does probably as well as anybody in the game. But, you know, their defense, team-wise,
worst in the American League.
Their speed, the middle of that batting order. You need 3 hits in an inning in a row to score a run because nobody can score from second on a base hit or virtually. So, and you run through it. All the things that they wanted to be in the offseason, more athletic, younger,
But that's on Shapiro and Atkins.
That is,
they said the right things, but their actions said something drastically different. They wanted to get younger. They wanted to get more athletic. What did they do day one? They signed Kendrys Morales, who's 33 and as slow as molasses. They go out there and sign Steve Pierce, who I believe was 32 or 33 at the same time. Again, not an overly athletic guy. They bring back Bautista because both sides ended up desperate and they swung and missed where they wanted to go with the marketplace, knowing that Bautista had lost a step or two. These were all foreseeable issues that this team was going to run into. What I'll grant them is Sanchez having the injury problems no one could see coming. And that is a sales pitch to a fan base that I think will be accepting that. That this is a guy who was expected to compete for a Cy Young, was supposed to be a top three, top five guy. A lot of quote-unquote experts picked him as the Cy Young favorite in the American League. We haven't even been able to see him pitch.
I thought going into the year, the one advantage the Blue Jays would have over anybody else was their starting rotation. And I thought because of the depth of the rotation, with Sanchez being the top of the rotation guy, then going into either Estrada or Stroman. Well, Estrada's been something of a disaster.
He's been awful recently.
At least half of the season. Whether you can get something for him of any quality at the deadline, I don't know. I mean, the one thing he's proven in the last few years is he's been a magnificent playoff performer.
He's a big game pitcher.
But is that in the past tense or is that now? Because how can you say that when he can't? What was that, 5-0 lead yesterday?
Yeah,
he couldn't hold.
Oh, his ERA is up around 5 now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So he's that. The one guy who's coming back to form is Hap.
Mm-hmm.
Hap is pitching now similarly to how he pitched last year. But so there's no Sanchez, and Estrada's a disaster, and you don't know from one start to the next what you're getting from Liriano. They tried Biagini.
He's not a starter.
He might be one day, but he's not right now.
And this isn't a 20-year-old kid. I mean, I think the proof is in the pudding. If you're banking on him taking advantage of the situation, I don't think he's done it.
The one nice thing you can say is that, and I think this is where John Gibbons comes into play sometimes, is he's found, this is his third bullpen of the season. Like, he started with one bullpen, then he had to revamp it all, and he had to go to another bullpen, and then everybody got hurt. And now he's got Danny Barnes and
Aaron Loop, Tapera
as the seventh and eighth inning guys. And he now has people who have pitched well enough to be dependable in those situations, coming out of that Blue Jays farm system that supposedly didn't have anything.
But that's where you can make your bones at the trade deadline, too. That is what teams are really looking for, is help in the bullpen. And that's where it's going to be difficult for Shapiro and Atkins to actually apply the logic that he supplied Scotty Mack earlier today, where he said we could be both a buyer and a seller. Well, if you're selling, you've got to sell what the market is looking for. And what they're looking for is pitching more often than not. But if you've got young arms who you feel like you can commit to or can be a part of this turnaround, and you also realize, based on what Shapiro said in the same interview earlier today, that they're not going scorched earth here. They're not going to blow it up and commit to 65 wins and try to get high picks and draft picks and prospects and all that. It's not going to happen. Then how do you move on from a guy like Tapera or Barnes or Smith? You know, guys who have given you good numbers but would have true value in almost any competitive team in the league who's trying to bolster their bullpen at the deadline might be willing to pay you something for it.
So you're looking at the Washington Nationals right now.
Their bullpen is a mess.
It's horrendous. So maybe one of your guys, not Asuna, because I'm keeping my young, cheap, effective guys. So one of those guys might bring you some value from another team. And one thing we do know about relief pitchers is what's good this year isn't necessarily good next year or the year after. So the time to strike sometimes is when he's hot. And who knows what those guys are going to be next year. Steve Delabar was in the All-Star game with the Blue Jays not that long ago and, you know, was designated for assignment a year and a half later.
Well, look at Jason Grilley. When they picked him up, he became...
Same with Benoit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Shapiro was on again with Scotty Mack earlier, and I've been saying throughout the summer and certainly throughout the week, the X factor in terms of determining where this front office was going to take the team revolved around one player, and that was Josh Donaldson. He is the veteran that can get you the most. He's a guy who could bring you a huge haul in return, because when he's healthy, he's still a top 5 or 10 player in the league. He's under control for another couple of years. Scotty Mack asked Shapiro earlier today about the idea of trading a guy like Donaldson. Here's what he had to say.
Josh Donaldson is one of the best players in all of Major League Baseball. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's hard for me to foresee any scenario where you trade one of the best players in baseball and get better.
See, what he forgot to say at the end was get better immediately. Because you can trade one of the best players in baseball and get better 3-4 years down the road, because that 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old prospect who is a 5-tool player but still 2-3 years away from the majors could be coming back the other way. But he's not going to help you sell tickets in 2018.
So when Alex Anthopoulos bugged Billy Bean and bugged him again and kept bugging him until he finally said yes to trading Josh Donaldson, you know which teams had the worst record in the American League since making that trade? The Oakland A's.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't recovered. Last season, Chris Sale was traded to the Boston Red Sox from the White Sox. You know where the White Sox are in the standings? Last place.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always work that you get return that is immediate in those kind of circumstances. As you say, you hope 2, 3, 4 years down the road you make up for making that kind of deal. Josh Donaldson's been in the majors. This is year number 7? Been in the playoffs
around
6
there.
Times.
Yeah.
It's no secret
he's a stud.
What he can do.
There's a reason he won an MVP. There's a reason why he's rated coming into the season by the MLB Network as the 3rd best player in baseball.
Well, my fear is that if you try and trade him and make a deal, it's the kind of deal that won't help you now. It will help you later.
Of course. But I don't think they have any interest in doing that. And that's why I play that clip. I think that's important to point out. Anyone that is a massive Donaldson fan that wants to see him stick around, I think you just got your answer. He's not going anywhere for a couple of reasons. One, he helps them be a better team today and tomorrow. But also, he's such a poster boy for this organization. There are so many Donaldson jerseys in the stands. He's a guy that you can sell. He's a guy that you want to watch. He's a guy that's easy to root for. He wants to be in Toronto. He's had success in Toronto. So, again, when Shapiro said in that same interview with Scotty Mack that the business side of things will be taken into account when it comes to player personnel decisions, Donaldson is, again, the poster boy for encapsulating both of those angles.
And the poster boy behind him is Jose Bautista, who's at the end of the line, who's making too much money, who can't perform either offensively or defensively to match his contract in any way, who he's popular because of what he's done in the past, not what he does now.
We'll continue with this Jays talk into the 6 p.m. hour. Don't forget, we've got the Bacardi prize pack to give away. We'll get to that next. All right, the phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. Mark Mullen, about an hour ago, taste tested a certain type of Bacardi rum. What was the name of this new Bacardi rum that we're giving away? The first caller in with the name at 416-870-1050 picks up a Bacardi prize pack, including a $100 LCBO gift card. Again, you must be 19 years of age or older to win. 416-870-1050. Dan Plesac will join us. MLB Network, MLB analyst, former Blue Jay, and Jim Popp, the GM of the Argos, coming up in the final hour as well. Sims is in here from the Sun. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app.